Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time, all of the latest news from J2 and J3 in the Japanese soccer game is coming up soon. I'm your host for part one, John Steele. I'll talk about the J2 action from last Saturday, from round seven. There are five games to talk about there. After a short break, James Taylor has the Sunday action for you from J2. And then, as a special bonus, our chat segment this week is my conversation with a very special guest, Victor Arroyo, a Kanazawa supporter extraordinaire. He's actually in Japan right now, so I got to speak to him face to face, which was very exciting. So that's coming up, and also after that, as usual, all of the J3 latest, all of the J3 news is coming up with Magic Mike Innes in the JTalk Short Corner. But for now, let's talk about the J2 big talking points from last Saturday in round 7, and the early game finished Kofu 1, Shimizu S-Pulse 0. Thanks to a late goal from Motoki Hasegawa, Kofu made it 4 straight wins, and they're now 4th in the table. In the first half, Hasegawa had the ball in the net for Kofu, but it was disallowed for an offside against Hirohiro Sugai. It looked like it was the wrong decision based on some replays that were shown on DAZN, but the goal was disallowed. In the second half, Kofu then hit the crossbar twice, first with a well-taken free kick from Manato Shinada, and then a header from Hasegawa at the far post. The vital goal for Kofu came in the 82nd minute, after some great work from Yoshiki Torikai to win possession for Kofu about 35 yards from goal. He then played in Hasegawa on the left-hand side of the penalty area, and he shot across Gonda and into the far corner. I think maybe Shuichi Gonda will be a little bit disappointed he didn't do better, kind of stopping the shot. But the ball went in, and it finished. Kofu 1, Shimizu 0. Shimizu with 5 draws and 2 defeats from their 7 matches so far. This was the final straw for them in terms of their coach, manager Zé Ricardo. He was fired shortly after this match, and they've moved quickly to appoint a new manager who's a very familiar face. It's Tadahiro Akiba. I think J2 fans will remember his, very fondly remember his time at Mito in the last couple of seasons. He was the head coach, kind of the head of the backroom staff going into this season at Shimizu, but he's now in the managerial hot seat. Up in Tohoku at Yurtech Stadium, it finished Sendai 0, Nagasaki 1 on Saturday afternoon. Juanma Delgado, after his hat trick in the last round, was on target again to win this one for Nagasaki. He scored a superb goal about 5 minutes into the second half. A couple of minutes into the first half was when Sendai had their best chance, and it fell to Takumi Mase. His initial shot was well saved by Go Hatano in the Nagasaki goal, and then Mase had the chance to follow up but blaze that over the crossbar. So a lucky escape for Nagasaki early on. But then, 5 minutes into the second half came Juanma's moment of magic. He was able to work about half a yard of space for himself on the edge of the penalty area, and then he bent the ball superbly around Sendai's keeper Akihiro Hayashi and in. Nagasaki almost doubled their lead on the counter-attack late on when Yuya Kuwasaki fired a loose ball against the base of the post, and Kaio Cesar then opted to shoot from a tight angle rather than passing across the box, and Hayashi was able to make a comfortable save. But the final score was Sendai 0, Nagasaki 1, a third straight win for Nagasaki, who are now up to 7th in the table. Sendai have 3 defeats from their last 4 matches, and they're in 16th. Staying up north, it finished Akita 0, Yamaguchi 1 at Soyu Stadium. Akita finally losing their unbeaten record this season thanks to a header from Jin Ikoma in the 64th minute for Yamaguchi. Ikoma had a free header from Shinya Yajima's corner, and he was able to power the ball past Kentaro Kakoi in the Akita goal. Just before half-time, Akita had their best chance to score. Yamaguchi's keeper Daisuke Yoshimitsu, making his first appearance of the season, by the way, made a brilliant close-range stop from Shion Niwa, kind of diving smartly on the goal line to keep out Niwa's shot. That was about as close as Akita came to a goal, and it finished Akita 0, Yamaguchi 1. Despite that defeat, Akita still flying high this season. They're in 5th, with only 2 goals conceded from their 7 games so far. This was a very important win for Yamaguchi, because it ends a run of 3 straight defeats for them, and they're 9th in the table at the moment. Elsewhere on Saturday, it finished Oita Trinita 2, Jubilo Iwata 1, Oita bouncing back from their defeat at Omiya in the previous round. Oita took the lead 6 minutes before half-time in this match when Kohei Isa knocked down a Naoki Nomura cross to Taira Shige inside the six-yard box. Shige showed great technique to control the ball on his chest and then acrobatically volley into the back of the net. So Oita 1-0 up at the break, and it was almost 2-0 early in the second half when Oita were able to cut Iwata's defence to ribbons, and Iwata keeper Yuji Kajikawa made a superb double save, first from Isa and then from Shige. Isa wasn't to be denied for long though, and he did get a second goal for Oita just on the hour mark. He used his strength to shrug off a challenge from Ricardo Grassa on the edge of the Iwata penalty area, and then he swiveled to cut a low effort into Kajikawa's bottom left corner. Superb goal from Isa. Iwata did manage to pull a goal back with about 6 minutes left. Rikia Uehara with a close range finish after a loose ball cannonballed into his pass. But Oita were worthy winners. It finished Oita 2, Iwata 1. Iwata 13th in the league table at the moment, while Oita are impressively third on goal difference. They're only 3 points behind leaders Machida. Such an impressive start to 2023 from Oita. And finally, from Saturday, it finished Tokyo Verdy 1, Omiya 0 at Ajinomoto. Another win for Verdy, who are second in the league table at the moment. They're also 3 points behind Machida, but ahead of Oita on goal difference. After a goalless first half here, it was Omiya who almost took the lead early in the second half. Masaya Shibayama volleying a low shot against the foot of the post from close range. But then the crucial goal came in the 65th minute. Kazuya Miyahara sent a high cross to the back post for Daiki Fukazawa to head past Omiya's keeper Kasahara to make it 1-0. That's two goals in two games for Fukazawa, and it was enough to earn Verdy all 3 points in this one. Omiya did threaten late on with Keisuke Oyama forcing a good save from Matias in the Verdy goal, and there was one more anxious moment for the home side as Matias kind of dropped the ball when he was surrounded by Omiya players near his own goal line. But Tokyo Verdy survived, and it finished Tokyo Verdy 1, Omiya 0. Omiya sit 10th in the table. They've lost all four of their away games so far this season, but won all three at home. And the big news coming out of Omiya is that their two kind of main strikers so far this season, Angelotti and Seiya Nakano, both have picked up injuries. They're facing about 6 to 8 weeks out. So it'll be interesting to see what Omiya's forward line looks like for their next game this weekend. But yeah, Verdy continue to march on. They are in impressive form early on in the season. Alright, that's all from me for the J2 action from Saturday then. In a moment, after a quick musical interlude, you're going to hear James Taylor round up the Sunday J2 action. And after that, my chat with Victor about Kanazawa and the state of J2 after 7 games. So please stay tuned. Here comes James with the Sunday action. J2
Extra Time. Thanks, John. James Taylor here with a quick roundup of Sunday's games. Let's start at the Gion Stadium, where league leaders Machida Zelvia took on Fujieda Mai FC, and it was the home side who prevailed thanks to an early goal by Mitchell Duke. The move started with a throw-in on the right side of midfield, and the ball was worked across the field to Hijiri Onaga, whose cross was aimed at Eric on the penalty spot. Fujieda keeper Kai Chidi Kitamura beat him to the ball, but unfortunately dropped it for the waiting Duke to score. Just after the half-hour mark, Machida's William Pop stretched well to save from Ryota Iwabuchi. Machida had the ball in the net for a second time with 65 minutes played after a rebound from an Eric overhead kick was turned in by Takeya Numata, but it was ruled out for offside against Numata. A fairly comfortable win for Machida in the end. They remain unbeaten and 3 points clear. Fujieda are 12th. Next, Mito Hollyhock picked up their first win of the season, inflicting a fifth consecutive loss on the home team Monterio Yamagata and triggering the end of manager Peter Klamovsky's tenure at the club. Hayate Matsuda got the game's only goal, stooping at the back post to head in off the post in this 36th minute, Matsuda's first J-League goal. Yamagata thought they'd equalised on the hour when Yoshiki Fujimoto reacted quickest to a deflected shot, but a very late and quite harsh offside flag ruled it out. Relief for Mito, while 5 losses in a row was clearly enough for the Yamagata front office, who announced on Tuesday that Klamovsky would be leaving the club. His record in all competitions at Yamagata is 37 wins, 17 draws and 27 losses, with the league finishes of 7th in 2021 and 6th in 2022. He's been replaced by Susumu Watanabe, who has managed Big Alta Sendai and run off for Yamaguchi and have been coaching at Yamagata since January last year. Elsewhere, Tochigi SC took on the in-form Zaspa Kusatsugunma in a game that only really sparked into life in the final 30 minutes, starting with Tochigi's Kosuke Kambe receiving a second yellow on 60 minutes. 9 minutes later, the 10 men of Tochigi took the lead when a flying Kenta Fukumori arrived at the back post heading a Hayato Kurosaki cross. The one-man disadvantage took its toll though, and Gunma drew level in the 77th minute. Strong work down the left from Atsuki Yamanaka, and his centering pass was tipped by keeper Kazuki Fujita onto the toes of Ryo Sato. Then, 10 minutes later, Yamanaka was again involved as his cross was headed down for Koki Kazuma to get a winner for Gunma, who move up to 5th with just one loss in their last 5. Tochigi are 20th, out of the relegation zone on goal difference. Tochigi are just ahead of Jeff United Chiba, who sit in 21st after somehow losing 2-0 away to Zeigen Kanazawa. It wasn't for lack of chances though, as they wasted plenty. Hiro Komori shot wide in the 3rd minute, Daisuke Suzuki headed over 2 minutes later, Tomoya Miki shot over in the 9th minute, Taishi Taguchi shot over in the 12th, Kazuki Tanaka shot straight at Kanazawa keeper Yuto Shirai in the 19th minute, Koya Kazuma failed to take advantage of Kanazawa defenders Fuga Sakurai and Ryota Inoue falling over each other, as his shot was blocked in the 24th minute. In the 35th minute, Shirai made a fine reaction save from a Miki shot, and Komori headed over from the resulting corner, and then just before half-time, Miki had a shot deflected wide. In amongst all that, Kanazawa went ahead in the 21st minute, when a Leo Baia cross from the left seemed to drift in the wind over Jeff keeper Shota Arai and into the goal. The second half was another litany of missed opportunities for Jeff, punctuated by a Junya Kato goal from a corner in the 54th minute. For the record though, just before that goal, Shirai saved a Miki shot onto the post. Just after the goal, Tanaka shot over and Riku Matsuda had a header saved very well by Shirai. Taguchi hit a tame free kick straight at the keeper. Naoki Tsubaki and Komori shot over. Hiroto Goya skied an effort horribly wide. Shirai saved low from a Komori shot, and to finish things off, Miki headed wide from a corner in the 96th minute. Fun for Kanazawa supporters, in case that didn't come across, who ended a run of 7 consecutive league losses to Jeff and earned their first clean sheet of the season and their first 3-game winning streak since the early rounds of the 2021 season. Frustration for Jeff, who haven't won since opening day. Still below Jeff, a point behind at the bottom of the table are Tokushima Vortis, who are still winless but did at least pick up a point away to Raso Kumamoto. The goals in this 1-1 draw came in quick succession. First, in the 54th minute, Rei Hirakawa opened the scoring for Kumamoto with a fine strike from the edge of the area after Tokushima lost possession in midfield. But immediately after, Daiki Watari got 2 attempts at the cross, and with 4 unmarked teammates to choose from, Shunto Kodama received the ball and just about got it past Ryuga Tashiro. Watari almost scored a minute later, but his effort was saved at point-blank range, and at the other end, Hayate Tanaka saved well from Shohei Aihara. Kumamoto sit in 14th, yet to find any real consistency this season. And finally, Fajiano Okayama dominated their home game against Iwaki FC, but still needed a dubious 94th minute penalty from Solomon Sakuragawa to snatch a point. Iwaki were in front after 9 minutes when a counter-attack saw Sota Nagai cut in from the left and pass before a touch from Ryo Arita set up Eiji Miyamoto to score. Han Eguan had a chance to equalise, and Sakuragawa had 3 before half-time alone, but it looked for all the world like it was going to be Iwaki's day. Then, in the 2nd minute of additional time at the end of the 90, Okayama's Takaya Kimura was brought down as he attempted a run into the area. Contact was initiated and, I thought, finished outside the area, but Kimura's momentum meant he fell over in the area and a penalty was awarded. Sakuragawa stepped up and scored, and the 1-1 draw means that Okayama are 8th, while Iwaki are 15th. That's Sunday's action sorted. Coming up next, John and Victor. J-Talk
Extra Time. Welcome back, everyone. John Steele here for our chat segment of J-Talk Extra Time for this week. And in a first for the pod, I'm joined by a live guest, if you see what I mean. It's Victor Arroyo. Victor, how's it going?
Good to be back in Japan. Glad to be here. Got to get a little bit of J1 action yesterday, and excited to talk about J2, especially after a nice run of form for Zwagen.
Fantastic. And Victor, it's really good to see you in person, face-to-face. Usually we're on the other end of a Skype call with our guests. So, this feels strange, but in a good way.
Yeah.
I hope it comes across that way for listeners as well. And we are in a karaoke establishment. That's a tradition we're carrying over from the Big Pod.
Oh, yeah.
So, it might be a little bit noisy in the background. We apologize if that's the case. I think it's your friends that are going to be the noisy.
They're having a good time.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. All right, well, Victor, without further ado, we're on the clock, I think, quite literally. So, you mentioned Zweigen Kanazawa already. I know you went to watch Marinos in Levan Cup last night, but we're going to skip over that because that's far too big time.
Big pot. I'll leave that for Sam to take care of.
Too big time.
Sam and Ben, you got this covered.
Yeah, it's far too big time for the J-Tech one. But Zweigen Kanazawa, let's talk about them. You're wearing the uniform, so we should start there. It needs to be a video podcast, really.
Of course.
But three straight wins, as you mentioned, and I think if we'd been talking a month ago, the conversation would be very different. Possibly even some negativity might have
reared
its head. So, where has it all gone right for Kanazawa?
Yeah, I think, this last game, I feel like, we actually deserve to win. I think the Sendai match was maybe a lucky win that we kind of definitely got away with. So, that was nice. And, I think beating Yamaguchi 5-2 was kind of like the catalyst that we needed. But I think the biggest change was, Jefferson Baiano is not our, starting number one striker, right? We've reverted back to having Hayashi be our main guy. I think the problem with Baiano was he likes to drop down and get the ball. And what we really need from him is to be a target man. That's why Toyota worked so well for us last year, because he could just get in the box and get in. But Jefferson, he wants the ball at his feet. He wants to bring it up. And, now I think with seeing that it didn't work the first three games and we've changed back to kind of what we're used to. And I think some of our newer players have adjusted. Junya Kato has been, our signing of the season. When obviously at the beginning I was certain it was going to be Jefferson. But, here we are six games in, and yeah, it's clearly that he's our number one signing of the offseason. Mm-hmm. So, I think we're finding our footing on offense. We're getting very lucky. We're figuring out our set plays. And we're actually playing defense now, which is very nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, as mentioned, we sort of been wanting to do a Kanazawa special for a few weeks, but we had to wait until they found their feet, as you said, this season. Are you surprised that Yanagishita's changed it so quickly? Because he does have this maybe unfair reputation for sticking with the same style of play, same players. But after, maybe three or four games, Bayano's gone out, other players have come back in. So it's kind of, he's tried something different and it's not worked, and he's recognized that early and changed it. That must be pleasing from a supporter's point.
Oh, yeah, huge. I think the difference this year is, I think, especially with the new stadium coming up, and there was a whole campaign to raise money, for the first team, and this was the first time that the team really splashed the cash. We brought in two Brazilian players, Leonardo, he's playing left back for us now over Nagamine, which at first I was very against, but after his fantastic cross turned into goal this last week, I think I've accepted that maybe it is the right choice. I think, he probably realized that, three straight losses was not okay, and that we needed to make changes, and that, his job was probably for sure on the line, especially we've already seen a few big sackings, and I'm sure he didn't want to be the next guy in. So I think it was the right choice that, he gave the new guys a chance. He reverted back to doing to what we know. And I think it's a good positive sign to see him do it early. I think last year there were some flashes of him trying new things, and now this year, it's good to see him continuing it. And I think with the new ambition that the club has, to see us now in 11th after we were pretty much dead last for the first 3 weeks, it's nice,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can feel it sort of brimming with optimism at this point. It's fantastic.
Shining.
Yeah, very bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. So you mentioned ambition. new stadium is progressing nicely. I know James Taylor has sort of wandered around outside, possibly more than once. Yeah. We don't know, but at least
very
once.
True.
How high do you think they can go this season, Kanazawa, Victor? Because, you know, at the moment they're 11th. I think James, I remember him talking about top 10 was kind of the target pre-season.
Yeah.
Obviously, after three games, that looked tricky to achieve. It's still early. We're seven games in at the moment, but three straight wins obviously change. Everyone's more optimistic after a run like that. Do you think top 10 is realistic? Do you think they could even have a tilt for the playoffs? Because, you know, at the moment, there are a few kind of, you know, Tokyo Verde are up there in second, for example. Maybe you could make a case for saying there's not that much difference between Verdi's squad and Kanazawa's squad.
So, right.
I guess my question is, if we get to December and Kanazawa have finished 10th, are you happy with that going into the new stadium and you won the playoffs?
Yeah, I would be happy, I think, at the end of the day, right, that we made it 10th. It would be the highest position for the club, never been higher than 11th. Finishing the season. So I think, that's a very good, realistic goal. I think, I don't think we're going to finish top 10, if I had to be really honest. I think we make too many mistakes. I think we let too many, you know, like extra time, you know, injury time goals in for, you know, me to feel that comfortable that we can make that happen. And who knows how long, you know, we can keep up this offensive output that's been really, really connecting. Our teams tend to run down around the summer, you know, come July, you know, everybody's got tired legs. There's not as much rotation in our squad. So, you know, that's a big worry. But, you know, honestly, I've been very pleasantly surprised. There's, I guess, three players, I think, that have really stood out to me. I mean, number one, I already mentioned it, but Junya Kato. He played for Gunma. He played pretty much every game for them last year, and he is a workhorse. I mean, he's very small. I think he's 5'5". I don't know what that is in, you know, real units, but, you know, in American units, he's a 5'5".
5'5" works in the UK too. International listeners can just open
Google. Google's got you covered. But, you know, he's small, but he's extremely fast. He's good with the ball, great passer, great defender, great energy. He can play in the middle, he can play on the left side, he can play on the left wing. He's kind of a slightly better version of, I would say, what Oishi was for us last year on the right side, right? I think he's a lot more defensively solid than Oishi. I think he's got better stamina, better legs. Obviously, he played every game for Gunma last year, so I have high hopes that he can actually finish the season for us. Leonardo, who was kind of a big question mark because he played in the second division of Portugal last year and only played two games. I don't think he had over 100 minutes actually playing for the club, so he was a real mystery, but he's actually a fantastic defender. And, you know, I'm the number one fan of Yuto Nagamine, who was fantastic for us last year at left back. One of the best passing left backs in the league, even at such a young age. But it was clear that defensively he had lapses. Positioning was an issue. He pushed up too far a few times. And I think now with the departure of Riku Matsuda, we've had to find somebody else to fill in the defensive holes in the back that we have. So I'm kind of glad that we have Leo there. Obviously, great highlight from that last game, got his first goal for the club and in Japan overall. Although I do think he played for Tonan in the lower leagues, so at least this is his first J2 goal that I know for sure. And then at right back, somebody that I had the pleasure of watching a lot in the Kanto University League, who has been starting for his great, but Sakurai has been fantastic. I kind of did a little mini scouting report on him over the summer that I posted on Twitter. And it's held out so far. You know, he's great defensively, an eye for loose balls. He can tackle, not very comfortable dribbling, kind of cracks under the pressure a little bit. But I think what he gives us defensively is great. And even for a player straight out of university in a position of need after losing, I think our most stable defender was great. And we got to do it against, you know, last week against the team that he went to. So it was a sweet little extra revenge there on the side. Mm. But realistically, I think we end up 13 to 15. I think that's a realistic position for us. I think we will eventually fall. I don't think we make the playoffs. I think that's super high hopes. I think there's a lot better teams. I think, you know, Selvia's been a real surprise. I think their managerial change was actually, you know, a proper choice for them. And seeing teams like Shimizu down may have given other teams hope. But I think teams like Sendai haven't performed as well as they should. Nagasaki's been flying high, and you never really know how far they can really go. So I think I see Verdi. I think Verdi is, you know, one of the most talented teams, I think, even though they seem to always crack at some point during the season. So, you know, I feel like this is a classic Verdi situation where, wow, they're playing so well, and then they have a really, really poor run of form that puts them out. So, but I think this year might be different. So let's hope that things will change. But yeah, I think 13 to 15th is a realistic position for Zweiger.
No, that sounds fair enough. I mean, I'm always looking for when a team has a good run of form and starts winning, I kind of look who the opponents were and what happened in the games. And I think, you know, not to pour cold water on Kanazawa at this point, because obviously I have to talk to James regularly. I don't want to upset anybody. Yeah, I think, you know, winning against Yamaguchi and winning against Jeff. I mean, Jeff pretty terrible this season.
Yeah.
Yamaguchi also a bit of a basket case defensively.
For sure.
However, sandwiched in between those two is the, you know, winning 3-2 away at Sendai. And whether they're out of form or not, that's no mean feat to go there and score three goals and win. So I do think... Masaki Yanagishina, we've given him criticism in the past on the pod for not changing quickly enough or for not being reactive when he should have been, so we should probably praise him now. And I do still think, I think you're probably right. I don't think top 10 would be amazing if they could do it, but I do think it's shaping up to be a better season than last year for sure.
I
think you never know, there is always space for one or two surprises in that top six. I mean, Kumamoto last year, you know, springs to mind. So let's wait and see. And, thank you for contributing so much.
Of course. Fingers crossed. Yeah.
You mentioned kind of managerial changes, and Machida was the one that you picked out. Mm-hmm. You also alluded to some sackings earlier.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, Victor, but I never feel like the J2 season's really up and running until someone's been fired. Oh. That's just the kind of mean-spirited individual I am. So we actually have two sackings that I want to pick your brains on before we move on. So first of all, the highest profile one is at Shimizu. Obviously, Zé Ricardo, the Brazilian manager, is gone after they failed to win any of the first seven matches. A bit of a surprise that they didn't win any, but therefore not a surprise that he's been moved on. The new coach is a familiar face to all J2 watchers, Tadahiro Akiba. Obviously, he did kind of miracle work at Mito for a couple of seasons. Then he moved to Shimizu as head coach. And in a move that, as you said, seems suspiciously pre-planned, he's now taken over as the number one for Shimizu. He's had one game in charge, which is in the Van Cup. They lost 3-0 at Shonan, but the real work starts, I suppose, at the weekend. And I'd like to get your thoughts as well on Yamagata, because they've dispensed with Peter Klimovsky, the Australian manager, after kind of 2.5 years in charge. Now, they won the opening two games of the season, but then they've lost 5 in a row and just looked like they lost their way completely. The new manager there is Suzumu Watanabe, who's stepping up from the backroom staff to take charge. For my money, that's a pretty underwhelming appointment, but we'll get your thoughts in a moment. So, Victor, manager's being fired after 7 matches, Shimizu and Yamagata. Well, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I guess we'll start with the big name first, Zé Ricardo, obviously. You know, I actually watched his Vasco da Gama team. I went to a wedding in Brazil, and I actually got to see his team play. And the difference between what I saw with that team and Shimizu is startling. When I saw Vasco da Gama play, they were highly offensive. It was very fast-paced. And I think lately, especially, right, he had, 14 winless games dating since last season. I think the biggest issue is, you know, you have Japan's number one goalkeeper just performed a miracle here at the World Cup. And they have one of the leakiest defenses that I see in J2. And that is a very low bar. All right. So I think that's what's unacceptable here, right? Like, you have arguably one of the best, if not the best, Japanese goalkeeper in all of Japan, not just J2, and you're still giving up goals a lot, right? I think, I just looked it up, but I think over his career at Shimizu, he has a negative goal differential, which is a little insane considering that Gonda's been there all this time, right? And when you think of Japan's number one, when you think of Shimizu, you know, a team with a storied past, and see where they are now in J2, struggling, a team that I think a lot of people during the J-Pred even picked them as a playoff team at the very least to go up, right? Like, and if not qualify for automatic promotion, at least get one of those playoff places and get a shot. And to see where they're at now, I think it was obvious. I think it had to happen. And, you know, it's a little sad because I do think, you know, he is a good manager, and I can't quite put my finger on what really has gone wrong, but it's obvious that they're not scoring goals. They're letting in way more goals than with the level of talent that they have, so I think that's a recipe for disaster. And 14 winless games, like, you go from J1 to J2, and, like, yeah, you not, actually, not they retained, the, they retained quite a few players that everybody thought were going to leave, and, you know, here you are looking at a possible relegation spot, and you're like, oh, that's not where I ever thought Shimizu would be, right? So, yeah, I think it's disappointing, but it's the right move, and, you know, I think they're in good hands, we'll see how things go, because obviously, I'm sorry, I forgot the...
Akiba.
Yeah, because I remember him from Hollyhock. He coached Firmito, and he seemed pretty good. I mean, I think he did well with the resources that he had, and I think with a team like Shimizu, who has the money and the fan base, I think he can do a lot better than what he did in Mito. And I think it's fairly obvious that at least in his first season in Mito, I think in 2020, he overachieved, right? So I think if given the chance and given the time, if he could replicate with what he did with Mito now at Shimizu, I think that they'll at least be able to right the ship, and then hopefully next year make a run to possibly go back into J2, because I'm pretty sure that's what all the fans at Nihon Daira want.
You mean back into J1?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, Fred. Well, how about Yamagata then, Victor? Obviously, they've fired Peter Kramovsky and Suzumi Watanabe's coming. I don't think it's, you know, five straight defeats is five straight defeats. Yamagata's target is top six. They're not going to do it. Losing every week, so they needed to make a change perhaps, but are you sad to see him go? Obviously the football was obviously very attacking and easy on the eye, at least in one direction, maybe not at the other end, talking of leaky defences, but yeah, what do you make of their change?
Oof, I mean, you know, it's tough because I always, as a Zweigen fan, as a, you know, a fan of a smaller J2 team and not big city team, I always viewed kind of Sagan Tosu and Monterio as like the models, right? Like, you make proper signings, you develop a lot of young talent, you sign the veterans in the right positions, but you still focus on developing the youth. I think, you know, it was a model that kind of worked for them, and I always really admired them, and I think it's really sad. And listen, I understand. I mean, hey, we lost the first three games of this season, and I didn't post it or anything, but I felt, you know, Yanagashita out. I felt the hashtag boil up inside me. But I contained myself. But yeah, you know, five straight defeats. I mean, it's clear that something is not working. The football's fun. I always enjoy watching them. It was kind of like watching Sagamihara in, like, J3. It was like, oh, it's about to be a goal fest, but who knows what direction it's going to go. I think it's sad. And I don't know much about the new manager. He's not somebody that I've really heard of or know much about. But it's clear that, like, a change was necessary. I don't know if he lost the dressing room or what was going on, but clearly the tactics that they had or the, what I would call the classic Monterio Yamagata formula was not working anymore. And I hope they can right the ship because, you know, they're a team I really enjoy, and you know, I hope that they can right the ship and continue to prove that, you know, small market teams can outperform their budget, can outperform their market. So we'll see.
I think that's fair enough. I mean, I think for me on Yamagata and Klimovsky, I know he's a super popular manager with Australians for the title.
For sure.
Obviously, he's a disciple of the Postecoglou school, of course. Yeah, but I think he never really got to grips with the defending at Yamagata, and you can't really build a sort of, you know, top six or promotion winning side without sort of negotiating the defensive side of things. And they've obviously had, you know, really good goalkeeper in Goto, and it's, you know, that's not really helped to short defense. They took Keisuke Nishimura from Omiya, and he's been starting recently at centre back. I mean, I would fire any manager that picked him without, you know, before the kickoff.
Yeah.
But I don't mean to single him out, but yeah, defensively they just haven't. They've never had quite the right mix.
Right.
And I think, like you mentioned with Shimizu, you know, they have the forward talent, Thiago Santana, Akira Disaro. Well, at Yamagata, it's Thiago Alves and De La Torre. You know, they have the good strikers, good attackers as well. And it's just not worked out defensively. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, I suppose if you've won 0 out of 7 and lost 5 in a row, that the new managers don't have a high bar to reach early on. We'll see how it goes. But it's interesting. And yeah, the season does finally feel like it's underway. Now that we are having teams looking at the league table or front offices looking at the league table, like, something's not going according to plan. So, maybe your Calm FC will be doing the same thing soon. But I digress. Let's move on, Victor, because our all you can drink time is nearing a conclusion.
Very true.
Perhaps for the best. But before I let you get back to your vacation, help me to preview some of the games that are coming up this weekend in J2 in round 8. So, because there's a midweek round coming up next week on Wednesday the 12th, that's round 9. Most of the games are on Saturday this week, April the 8th. There's just one game at 1 p.m. It's Kofu in 4th hosting Sendai. Quite a big game, I think. Most of the other games are at 2 p.m. There's Iwaki hosting Oita, Gunma against Nagasaki. Under new management, Yamagata, they go to Omiya, which is an interesting looking game as well. It's a leaders match at hosting Akita. So, two tight defences going head-to-head. And, the game that I picked out is Jeff Chiba hosting Tokushima. So, second bottom hosting bottom in a kind of wooden spoon race early on. The other game's at 2 p.m. It's Shimizu, of course, under new management with Tadahiro Akiba. They're hosting Tokyo Verdy, who are second. So, a real early test for Akiba. And, also at 2 p.m., Fujieda against Okayama and Yamaguchi against Tochigi. There's one game at 5 p.m. It's Mito hosting Iwata. And then just the one game on Sunday, Kumamoto daring to be different. They have a 3 p.m. match. It's Kumamoto against... Oh, I see it's Kanazawa, Victor. So perhaps we can talk about that. But what do you make of the games coming up at the weekend? Anything that we should keep an eye on?
For sure, there's three games that pique my interest. I think Iwaki versus Oita. I think... after the kind of legendary run that Iwaki have had, kind of rising the league and pretty much winning promotion all but 1 year of their existence, it's maybe, you know, a little surprising to see them not competing for maybe automatic promotion at this point. Who knows where they're going to be. So that's a match that I'll definitely keep my eye on. I think Machida versus Akita is going to be very, very interesting. Machida obviously flying high this season, and I think everybody is surprised. Probably even Martin, you know, number one Akita fan, is probably surprised that, they're doing so well this season, and they're definitely, I think, the meanest defense in the league. So I think it'll be a very interesting match to see. It'll be an old school throwback match, I think. It'll be very interesting. And obviously, without a doubt, I'm watching Kumamoto versus Kanazawa, you know? I know that Kumamoto got gutted last season after their terrific one. I mean, this offseason. But, I feel good that, you know, maybe we can make it 4-0 where, you know, I'll take a draw even if that's what it takes. But those are the three games that stand out to me. But I think most of the games actually look very interesting. So
I agree with you. I think it's a pretty stacked looking weekend. And of course, with the kind of midweek round on Wednesday, there might even be the potential for some rotation with a player or two. So that could be interesting. Kumamoto Kanazawa on Sunday. I mean, it's the only game on Sunday, so it stands out kind of automatically. But also, I think I mean, for me as a neutral, Kumamoto, you're not really sure this season which Kumamoto you're going to get.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I kind of feel the same way about Kanazawa, more or less, from the first three or four games versus the second. If we put the season so far in two halves,
for sure.
Second half, Kanazawa is very different to the first half. And maybe I'll just add for the 1 p.m. game on Saturday, Kofu against Sendai, it's Akira Ito, right, going back to his old club, and Sendai are not exactly lighting the place on fire right now, whereas Kofu are.
Yeah.
So I think that has the potential to be an interesting game. I don't think he's in any immediate danger at Sendai, Akira, but if Kofu did win that game, that's going to put Kofu, on the tip of the automatic promotion places, and that's going to leave Sendai 16th or lower, and that's not where they want to be after after eight match days. So, but I actually think it's a pretty strong slate of games, Victor, on Saturday and Sunday. I think we could look, anywhere and have fun with that. So, maybe we should mention one more time. Yeah, Yamagata, away at Omiya. That's the first match with Suzumi Watanabe in charge, and Shimizu at home to Tokyo Verdy. Well, Tadahiro Akiba, he knows his way around J2, but that's a tough test. I think Tokyo Verdy been really good so far this year. So plenty to look forward to, and of course we'll be back to review it, or someone will be back to review it next week. I'm not sure if it'll be me or yourself, but we'll be back to talk about it next week. Thanks so much for talking.
Anytime.
It's really nice. Yeah,
great to be here in the great J Talk Tower karaoke room. The finest. Only the finest here.
Well, we're expanding into we're doing a sidelining karaoke now to diversify.
Course,
different revenue streams.
Yeah.
Stadium will be online one day.
Of course,
But it's really good to talk face to face. It's not our first time face to face, but it's our first time podding face to face. It's really nice. Thank you. Thank you
thank you. Always appreciate the invite, and wouldn't miss this for the world.
Fantastic. And with apologies to Gary Erin, I hope Kanazawa do well on Sunday away at Kumamoto. Thanks a lot, Victor.
Of course.
All right, I think that's all the time we have from the J Talk Extra Time Towers karaoke room. So we'll leave it there for JT for this week. Please stay tuned though, because in a moment after some music, Magic Mike Innes is back in town as usual. He's got all the latest from the J3 weekend for you. So thanks as always for listening and downloading the pod. And if you support us on Patreon or the big J-Talk podcast on Patreon, we're very grateful. So thank you for that. But please stay tuned. Victor and I will sign off and drink more. But here comes Mike with J-Talk Short Corner.
J-Talk Extra Time.
Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on matches in round 5 of the J3 season, as well as previewing the round 6 matches coming up this weekend. Lots of goals in this episode? Maybe not, but we're now getting a sense of how the season might develop, and it's looking very competitive. There were two games on Saturday, the 1st of April, and after the chaos energy football of last week's draw with AC Nagano Paseiro, Katane Toyama coach Michiharu Otagiri must be delighted by his team's away win at FC Osaka. Not that it was a performance of quiet defensive efficiency by Katare. In the first half hour, Tsubasa Yoshihira and goalkeeper Tomoki Tagawa both presented the home side with clear chances when they fluffed playing the ball out from the back. And early in the second half, Tagawa saved on the line a header by Takumi Shimada that the Osaka striker really should have buried. But Arthur Silva played a full 90 minutes in a Toyama shirt for only the second time, and he scored the only goal of the game, a near-post header from Hiroya Sueki's free kick in the 68th minute. Moments later, it was almost 2-0, but Daichi Matsuoka's angled shot hit the post. Final score, Osaka 0, Toyama 1. Ryo Shigaki's Osaka squad in their current configuration looking ominously less than the sum of its parts. They remain second bottom of the standings. A first clean sheet this year for Katare, and without looking completely convincing, they're up to second. Talking of not looking completely convincing, FC Ryukyu coach Kazuki Kuranuki made four changes to the team that lost to Fukushima United last week, giving a full debut to rookie centre-back Shusei Yamauchi and a first start this season to goalkeeper Danny Kawahara. But his side were well beaten at FC Gifu. Ryukyu fell behind in only the 8th minute. The failure of Yamauchi to cut out Yoshiatsu Oiji's cross, enabling Kosuke Fujioka to score a simple header. Having gone in front, Gifu were rarely under pressure and themselves turned up the heat in the last 20 minutes, Fujioka putting a header from a Ryo Kubota cross just wide. Then in the 72nd minute, Tomoya Ugajin played the ball in from the left to the unmarked Oiji, whose shot was deflected in by Ryukyu defender Makito Uehara. Gifu's third confirmed the win 4 minutes from time, a counter-attack ending in Fujioka feeding Junya Tanaka, who clipped a neat left-foot finish inside the far post. Kuranuki's team did claim a consolation in the first minute of injury time, veteran Takuma Abe setting it up for Katsuya Nakano, whose 20-yard shot squirmed through the fingers of Takuya Matsumoto. Far too late, this seemed to waken Ryukyu from their slumbers, and within a couple of minutes, Matsumoto was called upon to tip onto the bar, a header from Takahiro Yanagi. Final score though, Gifu 3, Ryukyu 1. Kosuke Fujioka back to his 2022 best for Yusaku Ueno's Gifu. The second poor performance in a row for the visitors, and with the team changes made for this game, where does Kuranuki go from here? Then on Sunday the 2nd, Iwate Gruja Morioka went top of the table on goal difference following their Tohoku Derby win at Fukushima United. Against the backdrop of cherry blossom season outside the stadium, the Paper Cranes went ahead on 9 minutes when, after a brilliant first-time layoff by Cristiano, Ryoma Ishida out-sprinted Tomohiko Miyazaki, exchanged passes with Tsuyoshi Miyaichi and fired in from 10 yards. Fukushima offered little up front, although still in the game with 8 minutes left, they thought they were set up for a counter-attack, only for Miyazaki to be robbed by a superb tackle from Ren Fujimura. Masashi Wada then latched onto a Masakazu Tashiro pass, got the better of Naoya Suzu and beat Kaito Yamamoto at his near post. Final score, Fukushima 0, Iwate 2. Toshihiro Hattori's team lackluster once again. Gruja coach Yoshika Matsubara was red carded in the first half, but can have no complaints about his team's game management. And who's joined Iwate and Toyama on 10 points? It's relegation favourites Kamatamari Sanuki, who at their Pikara Stadium home got the better of promotion favourites Kagoshima United. On 34 minutes, the visitors only half cleared a corner, enabling Yuto Mori to set up Ikki Kawasaki, who unleashed a 30-yard screamer that gave Issei Oichi no chance. Last week, Sanuki centre-back Yudai Okuda scored two late headers to snatch a draw at Gainane Tottori. This week, Okuda nodded in another now Eguchi corner to double the advantage in the 69th minute. Kamatamari keeper Takiya Takahashi was rarely called into serious action, in part due to the hard work and bravery of the defenders in front of him, most notably Eguchi and Takumi Komatsu, both of whom blocked shots in a late goalmouth scramble. Final score, Sanuki 2, Kagoshima 0. Kamatamari at home have 3 wins from 3, and they only won 3 home games throughout the whole of last season. While for Kagoshima, something's not right. However fancied they were pre-season, they're now a way off the pace. Matsumoto Yamaga were dominant in possession, but couldn't make the breakthrough in their game at home to Gainale Tottori. Yamaga's best chance came early in the second half when Kunitomo Suzuki's cross reached the far post and the inrushing Yusuke Kikui, whose shot was blocked by Koshiro Itohara. An uncharacteristically resilient defensive display from Gainale, who perhaps as a consequence were less of an attacking threat than normal. Hideyatsu Ozawa's curling shot in injury time, their nearest miss. Final score, Matsumoto 0, Tottori 0. Yamaga's contradictions, unbeaten yet still unpersuasive, oddly emblematic of the micro-margined unpredictability of J3 in general. Easily Gainare's strongest defensive performance of the season, and as such, rather less fun than last week. Joint leaders with Matsumoto at the start of play, FC Imabari were also held to a draw in their game at home to Nara Club. Nara looked more threatening in the early stages, top scorer Hayato Asakawa volleying just wide when he should have hit the target. But Imabari made the breakthrough 8 minutes before the interval. A scramble for possession on the edge of the Nara box resolved when Hayato Teruyama's right foot shot deflected off Tatsuma Sakai beyond Shinji Okada. The home defence looked shaky, and in the 65th minute, Nara drew level as Kohei Teramura sent over a long cross to the far post. Shota Yomasaka easily evaded Wakaba Shimoguchi and headed home. Soon afterwards, visiting keeper Okada, one of four ex-Imabari players to make an appearance for Nara, made a brilliant double save to keep his team level, first from Marcus Vinicius' header, then Yuta Mikado's powerfully struck follow-up. And there was double controversy in the closing moments. At one end, a shot from Imabari's Hikaru Arai appeared to have crossed the line before being grasped by Okada. And in the following counter-attack, Imabari keeper Cervantes was perhaps lucky to escape a red card when he brought down Sakai in what could have been seen as a dogso. Final score though, Imabari 1, Nara 1. Niki Takagi's Imabari remain unbeaten, but this game too was a fine example of how close J3 is looking this year. Nara growing into the competitiveness of the division, easy opponents for no one. Nobuhiro Ishizaki must be pretty pleased with the early season results of his new side, Vanrare Hachinohe, now four games unbeaten after their home draw with Giravance Kitakyushu. A pretty even match this one, an achievement for Hachinohe, given Kitakyushu have over the last couple of years signed their best players in Ryusei Nose and Yosuke Kamigata. On 11 minutes, Takayama Yamoto netted his first goal for Vanrare, volleying in from 10 yards after Yuki Aida got behind a sluggish away defence and hooked it back from the byline. The equaliser came 10 minutes later, the home back line failing to clear a corner kick and Takeaki Homura's shot deflecting off Shintaro Kato past a wrong-footed Shogo Onishi. Onishi throughout put in another excellent performance to deny the Sunflowers, although the scores stayed level thanks mostly to a miss of the season contender from Kamigata. Unmarked, 2 yards out, dead centre of goal, his volley somehow hit the outside of the post and bounced away. Final score, Hachinohe 1, Kitakyushu 1. Fine margins indeed for Vanrare, but mid-table for them will do very nicely. Giravance taking time to gel under Kazuaki Tasaka. After a tempestuous last couple of games, AC Nagano Parseiro managed a narrow home win over coach Yuki Stealth's former side YSCC Yokohama. The visitors' best chance came from Yusei Kayanuma's header over the bar. Parseiro had more opportunities and made one of them count. That was in the 61st minute when Yasufumi Nishimura scored within 20 seconds of coming on as a sub, scuffing Masaki Miyasaka's free kick over the line at the near post. Final score, Nagano 1, YSCC 0. Parseiro, mid-table, one of five teams on 8 points. But that means they're only 2 points off the top. YSCC still looking for their first win. New striker from Ecuador, Carlos Arroyo, getting a brief cameo late on. Couple of deeply contrasting goalless draws to finish with. Tegevajaro Miyazaki against Ehime FC was about as action-packed as a no-score game gets. Stacks of chances and near misses at either end. Tegevajaro have managed just 2 goals so far this season. Their forwards, Keigo Hashimoto and Kazuki Takahashi, here going some way to explaining why this is, missing excellent opportunities. Takahashi's a one-on-one in injury time that was superbly blocked by Kenta Tokushige. At the other end, Ehime's Riki Matsuda has begun the season well, but was off target on multiple occasions throughout this one. The Mighty Mikan's new Australian striker, Ben Duncan, a recent signing from Central Coast Mariners under 23, made his first J-League appearance off the bench, but to no avail. Final score, Miyazaki 0, Ehime 0. The frustration continues for Hiroshi Matsuda and his not-quite Tegevajaro side. After Ehime's disastrous season opener, Kiyotaka Ishimaru has restored some balance. And SC Sagamihana against Azul Claro Numazu never had the makings of a classic. In contrast with the above, there was pretty much no clear goalmouth action. The nearest anyone came to getting on the score sheet was in the 22nd minute when Numazu's Kyota Mochi picked up a good through ball from Haruki Toyama and lobbed keeper Akihiko Takeshige only for his effort to hit the top of the bar. No surprise it was Mochi to go close. The 24-year-old who spent last year on loan at Sagamihara is the bright spark of this Azul Claro side, and indeed one of the standout players in the division so far this season. Final score, Sagamihara 0, Numazu 0. Kazuyuki Todas Sagamihara at this stage looking set for a year in the bottom 4 or 5. Masashi Nakayama's Azul Claro have more about them, but continue to lack a cutting edge. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 5. The top 6 are Iwate, Toyama and Sanuki, all with 10 points. Matsumoto and Imabari with 9, Tottori with 8. At the other end of the table, the bottom 6 are, from 15th downwards, Numazu and Miyazaki with 5 points, Sagamihara with 4, Fukushima and FC Osaka 3, bottom of the pile with 1, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the round 6 fixtures over the weekend, when there are 5 games on Saturday the 8th of April. Table-topping Iwate are at home to Sagamihara. Decent-looking clash at Ehime, where the visitors are Gifu. Ryukyu face the challenge of a home game against Nara. Bit of a must-win match for Kagoshima, who go to YSCC. Two teams in the bottom 6 meet at Numazu, visited by Fukushima. Then on Sunday the 9th, joint leaders Toyama are at home to Miyazaki, while Sanuki go to Nagano. Imabari make the trip to FC Osaka. Matsumoto heads south to Kitakyushu. And finally, Tottori play host to Hachinohe. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.